To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction. All right, you've heard the song. You know who we are. I'm Don.
And I'm Al.
And we're on the road.
To Tampa.
We were talking about that store of comics and stuff that Al found due to Hurricane Irma, and we decided we're going to go over there
and buy more dollar comics.
Yeah, that's all I thought about, actually. It takes so little.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, you know, I like buying dollar comics. I don't like buying $4 comics. I like buying dollar comics, but occasionally I'll get a $4 comic. But I prefer the dollar one just because they're older and cooler, and maybe I don't have them. I don't know.
Well, I like that. I take more chances, you know, just a dollar. But I'm always looking for stuff that, you know, holes in your collection, you know, trying to fill those out.
Yeah.
But I'm more willing to take a chance on something that... There was a book I saw on Facebook a lot from IDW called The Infinite Loop. And I liked it. I thought, that looks kind of neat. But I didn't want to take a chance to spend $4 on it. I wasn't sure. I thought it had a neat look, and that was about it. Well, I found some at this store. I found actually about 4 issues of it.
Huh.
And I had them in my pile, but I ended up buying so many, and I found like 7 Casper comic books.
Yeah.
So I put those 4 back. I ended up buying the first issue only. And it was, I think, a 5 or 6 issue series. And anyway, at home I read that. The story was great. The artwork went right along with it, which, like I said, I already liked. I thought, okay. So I went back the next week to get those. And either I missed that box or somebody got them. Because I went through all the dollar boxes and I couldn't find it. I ended up finding the 5th issue. But I'm trying to find the other ones. But this one, knowing now, I would have paid full price and been happy if I would have collected them. Velvet, that book that, you know, you and I talked about before, I found those in the dollar box at Wilson's.
Oh, yeah, really? The ones with, the ones by, which one called? Brubaker and, I forgot who the artist was.
Was it Epting?
Yeah, it was Steve Epting.
Yeah, Steve Epting.
Brubaker, yeah. You found those on it?
I found the 2 I gave you at Wilson's. You said you had some issues.
And I had a few, yeah. I had the first one.
Well, I went to Comics and Stuff last time, and I ended up getting like 5 issues of it.
Oh, man.
Because I just figured I'd just get the trade, but I found some more issues. All right, so I bought them. As a matter of fact, he even asked me if that was good. I said, yeah, I like it. I've only read a couple issues, but it's kind of incredible. And then I apologized because he said he was wanting to read them. So I'm sorry that I took them out of your box.
Yeah, well.
He said, no, I'm going to get the trade. But he was, like I said, he was thinking about it. Trades, to me, are different. I don't mind, you know, it's nice to get a trade cheap, but I really don't mind paying full price for a trade.
Well, if you get a trade and it's a 5-issue series, isn't it probably cheaper to buy it as a trade than it is to buy all 5 issues? It probably is.
Maybe.
And the trades bring more stuff and the more extras or whatever. But, you know, if you really like it, you really want to read it, so you buy the regular issues. If you can find them, because I don't know, like, I don't go to comic shops that much anymore. But I would imagine that most of the stuff that I would be ordering or getting would be stuff that would have to be specially ordered for me anyway, so.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the sad part about it, you know what I mean? But, you know, they just keep... And the Marvel and DC stuff is like... I mean, I guess I've heard a story that there was like... There's a New York Comic Con going on now.
Yeah.
And there was some like turbulence going on between the retailers and the Marvel comics or DC. Because they don't like the direction that Marvel's taking. And supposedly there was like, you know, words being said and stuff like that. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, what are they upset? What?
They're accept that they're I'm guessing.
Okay. Yeah.
This is a total guess, but Marvel's going in, from what I understand, and I don't read them. They're changing up a lot of their characters. They're making their comics like seem less and less. Let's put it to you this way. Oh, here's the easiest way I can do it. If you go and you watch a Marvel movie and you want to go buy the comics, if you grab a new issue from Marvel Comics, you would not recognize some of the characters because they've changed them so much. They've either feminized them or changed their costume or their appearance or whatever. It's just like, and the people, from what I understand, not all the retailers, some of them are complaining that Marvel's kind of like losing their way or whatever. They have a bunch of young female editors or whatever, and they're kind of taking their books in a kind of an indie way, you know what I mean? And they're emphasizing maybe more female things or whatever, and when somebody goes sees a movie, it's like, this isn't the movie, this is completely different. So, and I'm just guessing from what I hear. So apparently there's, and like, supposedly, I don't, again, this is stuff that I hear. You can look it up for yourself and see if you can figure it out, what's true or not. Some of these books that Marvel's publishing now are selling like maybe $5,000-$6,000, 5,000-6,000 copies a month. It's like, okay, you know, I mean, they're not, if they keep losing money, if they are losing money for Disney, that's not going to last. So apparently it was some kind of a blow up from what I hear. You can look on YouTube and, you know, type it in and take it for what it is, but that's stuff that I've been hearing. I don't know about DC, but on the other hand, you know, I was talking to Mao today, and he was telling me, God, why is it that Marvel makes such good movies and DC movies aren't that great? I go, well, Wonder Woman did really good this year. He goes, yeah, but in general. I go, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. You're talking to the wrong guy, because I don't watch their movies or read their new comics, but I love their old comics. So there you go.
Yeah, you know, but to me, the Marvel movies, the way I was looked at is any comic, Marvel comic you buy is going to look like those movies, regardless of what they change, even the old stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the movies are their own thing. And if, I like I said, James Perry watched the movies and started going to comics, and that's fine. But even the X-Men movies, you know, from Fox, they didn't look like the X-Men in the comics.
I know, but, I mean, if a parent brings their kids to the store and they don't see it looking the same as the movie, they might just not buy it, because it's like, what is this? This is another Iron Man's a woman? You know, what's this? This isn't the movie that we just saw or whatever. I, you know, again, this is just stuff that I hear. I can't, but there is basically, and you know, these stores are like so dependent on Marvel and DC to sell that if they don't sell, they're screwed. Because they can't, I mean, unless they're good at their business and they have an audience for indie books or whatever, they're living off the big two, you know? And then everything else, like we were talking about before, is special order for people. So, I mean, again, I don't know the comics industry. I've gotten out of it in the last few years, and I don't know, but I hear things, I watch, I see videos, I read, you know, some blogs and stuff like that, and you know, you kind of like go, huh, I wonder what is going on. I know that, I'll tell you one thing, from what I read, that New York Comic Con is like $90 a day to get in. And I was like, holy
wow,
holy moly, $90 a day, okay.
Well, is it in Manhattan?
Yeah, sure.
Well, it's
at the Javits Center or something like that.
Well,
yeah.
Manhattan's really expensive. I mean, I don't know. They may...
It's expensive to rent, too.
Yeah. Maybe you may be paying for that, but I don't know. Sometimes when you pay a lot of money like that, you get a lot of stuff, and they give you a lot of access to things.
And if you go to it there, you don't have to park, usually, because they're all trains.
Yeah.
So you don't have to spend $30 on parking, or $20 or whatever. You know, you figure you go to a MegaCon, and it's $30 to get in, and 20 to park, you know, you're already out $50.
Yeah, so
I'm sure the dealers aren't thrilled about that, but you know, hey, whatever. Not my business. I just talk about the books. I rarely buy them. And there's some guy on the side of the road doing repair work on his car. I was like, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, we're just across the Howard Franklin Bridge. We're now in Tampa.
Yeah, that's a pretty quick drive here.
Yeah.
We're like South Tampa, though.
Yeah.
Real South Tampa. But yeah, so, you know, that's supposedly what's going on with the comics these days. But, you know, like I said, the reason I found this place was because I was driving, I saw $1 comics, and I went, yes, you're singing my song.
I'll tell you, when I'm in the store, there's always people come in and say, yeah, I saw your sign. And, you know, one guy brought his kids in. And I'm always kind of impressed because you told me about it. I was searching, and I passed it. And even the second time I came, it took me a while to find it. It's easy to miss.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
But
it's only one road, you know what I mean? So if you miss it, you just turn around. And I know it's before you get to Channel 13. So,
yeah. Well, that's why it saved it, because when you were telling me about it, you mentioned Channel 13 was right by there. So,
Yeah, we're in the turn lane. And did you say that around here there was like a Barnes & Noble, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, afterwards, if it's nearby, because there's this one magazine called The Creeps. It's like a creepy-style magazine. And our Barnes & Noble near in Tyrone, where we live, near where we live, they don't have it. I know it's out, so maybe this one has more stock in it or whatever, but I'd like to find a copy of it if I can. If not, then, you know, life goes on.
This show is by no means connected to Barnes & Noble, even though we shop there once in a while.
We rarely shop. I think I was more of a Borders guy, you know, back in the old days. But
me too.
But there's some Barnes & Noble down in South Florida where two-story places, so they're pretty amazing.
You know, that is true. Sometimes not all Barnes & Nobles are the same.
Yes.
You know, to me, the Borders are all kind of the same. But Barnes & Noble, the one by us, I don't find that great. But
it's a baby store.
Yeah, but when they built that, that was massive. It was a big article in St. Pete Times about how the mall stores, B. Dalton and Walden Books, weren't happy about it.
Oh, yeah.
And they said basically they just carried the best sellers at those stores, whereas this one carried a lot. And then all of a sudden I started hearing people, yeah, I love Barnes & Noble. I'd never been in one for the first few years it was around. But yeah, there's one at Clearwater that my daughter and I would go to that was far superior than the one by
us. Yeah, the Clearwater is still the better one. Yeah, it's way bigger and stuff like that. But,
yeah, but the stock is laid out differently.
Yes.
They have more stuff. And
yes.
The stuff in the St. Pete area, it's not really.
And I've noticed that the one near we live, they carry a certain amount of comics. Oh, there's a guy. Oh, I thought he was. Never mind. I thought they carry a certain amount of comics, but I don't think they carry Marvels. I think they just carry DCs and Archies. It was kind of weird when I looked through their comic books. And they're kind of buried at the bottom there, too, so it's like.
Yeah, and they're not really inspired on how they order things.
No, they're not. There's not. You know, they're burying pretty bad. And. And I do. They do have a good selection of what you want to call it. Oh, there's West Shore. There's that hotel I stayed at right there. Huh. No, a little bit. I guess it's north of here or something like that. I don't know, but yeah. What does that taxi cab say? We'll work for milk and cookies. What the hell was that?
What is this?
Is that a police car or something?
If something should happen to me, put on my suit. The reindeer will know what I do, what to do.
It says old elf. This guy must have bought an old police car.
Oh, yeah, I see on the bumper it says, we'll work for milk and cookies.
Yeah, that's weird. That's weird.
Yeah, it looks like a police car, but there's no markings
on it.
Some
people buy old police cars. It's got Christmas stuff inside of it.
It still has the lights.
And it's got Christmas colors, too. Yeah, I don't know what the deal is. There's some.
Well, it's maroon and white.
We're in a funky place now, I think. You're going to take a picture of it?
Well, I'm not going to make it.
Oh, God. Did you go to Wilson's this week? Did you get anything?
Yeah, I went yesterday. No, not yesterday. This is the first time in a long time I've gone there where I haven't gotten anything. There's nothing in my box. And I usually, you know, go through the wall, you know, the new books, and then go through the new arrivals in the dollar boxes.
Yeah.
But no, there was nothing. They have a lot of stuff in it, but nothing I wanted.
Oh, okay.
Now,
that's weird.
Here's the thing, though. One time Dallas said, let's go. He was in the office, and he and I went. And I just went through some of the... I didn't go through the new arrivals. I just went through some of the dollar boxes. And I walked out with a massive stack. So, you know, if you take the time to go through it, you're going to find stuff. But, you know, I just got off work, and I just was kind of wanting to go in and out.
And, you know, around here, I'm pretty sure, I'm going to look around for it. There's the American Legion Cemetery where Rondo Hatton, the old 40s horror movie star, is buried there. Joust and I actually visited, so I'm sure
yeah.
Maybe it's a little bit further down, but I know it's around here. I know this is the road we took to go see
Rondo.
Well,
that was funny, because when Joust was on, he was on one episode of the show, which was really nice, and he was so excited because you guys went and found. I didn't know who he was, and he said that was the character. Somebody played him in the Rocketeer movie.
Yeah, and he was also a character in Dark Horse Presents called The Creep. They drew him to look like Rondo Hatton. And you're right, he was in the Rocketeer comic book. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I think the movie, too.
And the movie, too. Yeah. Well, he was a guy. He was an actor who had, like, acromegalia, which is, like, I don't know if it's elephant man disease or whatever, but he got that because of, like, he got gas. Supposedly, he got gas in World War I, and it hit and it affected him or whatever. So he got disfigured, but somehow or another, somebody saw him and they go, hey, you know what, you want to be in movies? And like, oh, sure, you know, and he did about maybe, I don't know, a bunch of movies, memorable. Let's put it that way, he's a memorable character. Kind of like Tor Johnson, you know, from the Ed Wood movies
or whatever.
You know, there was a comic book too called Tor Loves Betty or something like that, some years ago.
Who was it? Drew Friedman in Heavy Metal.
Yes.
He used to do those Hollywood things, and he did one on Tor Johnson.
I think I had a T-shirt of that, and I gave it to Joust or somebody like that.
Well, that's, to me, what most of us learned who Tor Johnson was because of Drew Friedman.
Yeah, these cool, kooky, old movie guys or whatever. Yeah,
and then Betty Page was because of The Rocketeer. I mean, you know, I didn't know who she was.
I had no idea.
I thought she was made up. I thought Dave Stevens made her up.
I did, too. I'd never seen any pictures of her or anything. That was like some hidden, like, secret handshake old men's magazine thing. I had no clue who Betty Page was. I mean, I knew who, like, you know, Jane Mansfield and Marilyn Monroe and Mae Van Doren were, whatever, you know, but I don't remember Betty Page, but she's pretty memorable.
Yeah, well, yeah, she's got her own clothing line at the mall now.
And she used to live, not in her prime, but when she was past her prime, I think in the 70s and the 80s, she used to live in Hialeah, and that's where I used to live, too, which is crazy, you know. But I've seen the picture, and she was, she was already, like, a middle-aged woman. But, yeah, that was in good times for Betty. But anyway, yeah, Dave Stevens period. And did they, I mean, maybe we talked about it before, but refresh my memory. Why was it that they couldn't use her in the movie? She didn't agree to be, she didn't want to be.
That's one of those things where I've heard a couple of stories, and I don't know if either one's right. The first one I heard is when that movie came out, that she wasn't in it, and I guess Disney told Dave Stevens that, you know, a 50s pinup girl probably wasn't the best idea for the movie.
Oh.
I mean, which would make sense that Disney wouldn't really want Betty Page in it. And
that's the old Disney.
Yeah, well, but I don't know if that was true. That's what I'd read in some magazine. And then later I heard it was something about rights issues, and I really don't know which one was which. Some guy at work, you know, he used to be able to subscribe to all these catalogs.
He
did that. He filled out something, and next thing you know, he was getting catalog palooza. This is in the early 90s. And he kept getting stuff from Kitchen Sink Press and, you know, Fantagraphics and all these catalogs. And he kept coming up and said, "Who's Betty Page?" And I said, "Well, she was in The Rocketeer." And he kept talking about, they have all these, you know, it used to be a previews magazine. You see all these books and magazines and comics about Betty Page. And I said, she was a pinup. I never heard of her, but she's in The Rocketeer, and now she's everywhere. And,
I think that's her right there.
Is it?
Is it?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I go through this every time. Good
radio.
Yeah.
It's hard to find because it's on the opposite side of the road, but we're getting to Channel 13 already. And
well, anyway, my friend, he had brought up that they had a TV piece about her, and they actually interviewed her, but they didn't show her. They showed the back of her head. And when she was interviewing, she said, I guess she didn't get any money for any of the stuff that they were putting out. But she was one. They were working on legal issues.
Dave Stevens helped her get money.
Yeah, but they were working on it, and I guess she did eventually start getting it. But that might be another reason why Disney didn't put her in the movie.
That's possible too. Yeah, that's possible too.
Because I've read that as well. And like I said, I don't really know, but I do think she got some things for
she
it.
She did. She did.
But I didn't think they did a bad job on the Rocketeer movie.
Jennifer Connelly was pretty great in that.
Yeah,
movie.
It was A-okay. Anyway, we're here at the store. Let's have a music break.
I can't blame you at all. You're staring down a long, long way to fall. And things aren't what they seem.
Can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.
Well, that's how we came in on.
Oh, wow, okay.
All right, and that was Grey Market. They're a local band down in St. Petersburg. You may be able to see them somewhere in Tampa. I love them. Anyway, all right, we just left comics and stuff.
and we're tired.
Yeah, went through a lot of dollar boxes. The guy said he put a lot of new stuff out. He said the dollar boxes are about half gone.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff.
We still
found something.
Yeah, I'm really happy what I found. He had two boxes. He said he was going to put some of that in the dollar box, and he told Alice, says, actually make this two for a dollar in this box.
Yeah, it was mostly 90s stuff.
Yeah. It was, but I went through every single issue, and I found a complete issue of Carl Barks' Uncle Scrooge, which is some of my favorites. It was a nice printing from the 90s or 2000s. I think I found four books in there. But one of them, I'm jumping up and down, and I offered it to Al, and I guess he could see I was so desperate, he let me keep it, but it was Howard Chaykin's Iron Wolf, the original from the 70s. They had them all printed in one issue with a new Howard Chaykin cover, which I can't wait. I've never read the whole series.
I thought you had those Weird Worlds.
Some of them. I would have bought all the Weird Worlds, but I only saw it once in a while. I'd pick one up and, oh, this is nice. And every once in a while, I'd find one in a used bookstore. But I never read all of them. I never saw them. I think I saw one issue with Iron Wolf, and that was it.
What was that? Was it Fafhrir and the Grey Mauser, the first story, the main story?
They had their own. That was a book called Sword and Sorcery that Howard Chaykin.
I'm getting all those confused.
But it's easy to confuse them. And I always thought Carson the Venus appeared in Weird Worlds. Come to find out,
it was in Korak.
Yeah, it was in Korak, the backup. But no, Weird Worlds. The ones I bought, the first story was John Carter of Mars. It was the main one Murphy Anderson drew.
Okay.
And then the second story was the Pellucidar at the Earth's core that Alan Weiss drew. But they were, each one was different.
Yeah, I know. It was like, I bought them so long ago, I can't even remember. I know it was like, the Korax had Carson of Venus, and then some of them had, you're right, it was Pellucidar and John Carter, and then Tarzan was just Tarzan, right? And then, was there another one of those? No, I guess that was it.
There was Tarzan and the Korax, son of Tarzan.
And those were picked up by DC, because before, those were all licensed to Gold Key, right? Watch out,
yeah.
That guy's going into slang, too.
Thanks, man. No, yeah, it was, originally it was Dell. And then when Dell and, when Western Publishing and Dell split, Western Publishing had Gold Key. And at one point, they turned into Whitman. And then they turned it back to Gold Key. I never really understood that.
Yeah, there's a story there. I think we even touched on it before, but I don't remember what it was. I think Dell was... They were connected with Whitman, and Whitman just kind of like went on their own or something.
Yeah, it was a partnership. And
it was a partnership, yeah.
If you understand Whitman, Western, it was Western Publishing.
Western, yeah.
Western Publishing, I guess, was the distributor. Basically, they were the distributor. But I think Western had Whitman, which did coloring books, you know, all the kids' activity books and stuff, crayons. But Dell and Western were major partners, and Dell was actually, they say, the biggest comic publisher in the world. They were West Coast based. But there was a problem with something, and then they just decided they'd go on their own way.
And Dell kept some books.
Yeah.
But they lost a lot of the licensed books or whatever.
Yeah, and they couldn't get distributed. Dell kind of disappeared after that. It killed them.
Well, yeah, you're right. It kind of did. Yeah, it did.
Because
all the Boris Karloffs and all that stuff was put out by Western.
Yeah, which was Gold Key. But you didn't see Dells very often. I saw them once in Texas, in Graham, Texas, and I thought they were gone. I think they lasted to 73.
That late?
Yeah, but that's what Wikipedia says. But whenever I see it, I'm like, wait, really? Because I never saw them. They were always an old thing to me.
I think I did get a Whitman book. Let me see if I can find it back here. It was like Dagar or whatever. The sword.
Yeah. That was out of that half price. I thought you got that on the half price.
No, I didn't. Let's see. Yeah, right. It's Whitman.
Yeah, Dengar the Invincible.
Yeah, these are great, man. They're sword and sorcery books, but this was around the time of 73 when Conan was doing pretty strong. And these are all really nice Jesse Santos books. Even the cover. It was a pretty awesome artist. He's probably my favorite of all the Filipino artists.
Oh, he did the cover as well?
Yeah. I don't think he did any work for Marvel in DC that I can think of. He did mostly work for Western. But yeah, these are awesome, man. Yeah, he did this and he did, Dr. Spectre.
Yeah, that's what we talked, because when you said in the story you were telling me, and I remember the name, but I couldn't remember any. It was Dr. Spectre.
Dr. Spectre.
Oh, Dr. Spectre.
Dr. Solar was a superhero. Dr. Spectre was like it was into the supernatural.
Okay, I know we talked about him on the show.
Yeah. No, those are really great or whatever. So, I also got the Eternals King Size Annual.
Yeah, that's a great one.
I've never read it before, so at least I got something that I never had. I never had this Dengar either. This Tigra book, I'd never seen this either. Wish he had more of them. I like Mike Diodato. He's a pretty good artist.
Oh, that was the Marvel Icons. Yeah, it's sweet. Yeah, I was become a huge Tigra fan, Tigra. But I like the cover on that.
What was Marvel Icons? Was it?
I don't know. It just says on the top Icons.
Oh, okay. And I got a Supergirl number 11 with that, which I may have already, but it had Bob Oxnard and an odd Gil Kane cover. Well, and it was about the time Superman 3 came out, so I guess that's like early 80s or something like that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I love Gil Kane. When you said a weird cover, the problem is sometimes Gil Kane was just, it seems to me like he wasn't going past thumbnails after a while. He was just throwing something down and leaving it at that.
Yeah, I think he was like doing really loose pencils.
Yeah,
and then inking it on flare marker.
Yeah, he was there inking things in flare.
And that's what this looks like. It's still great.
It's good. He had a style I like, but it didn't really seem like there was a lot of thought to it. It was like, oh, I'll throw this in, and there's a composition to it. But
there's a composition to it, yeah.
But yeah, it got kind of strange.
Yeah, he was making his style a little. He was probably cranking it out.
Yeah. The next issue you're talking about.
Star Hunters. That's Buckler and Bob Layton. I remember these from the 70s.
I did too. I bought the first issue.
I think Don Newton did a couple of them. Yeah, they're kind of fun. It's a 70s book,
That came out right before Star Wars.
Did it?
Yeah, and I remember, because, I always liked space action, fantasy, science fiction, sci-fi. And so I was kind of excited about that. And I think the first issue, the first page, it shows them, two or three of the characters floating, and, their legs are crossed like a lotus position.
Yeah.
They're like playing chess or checkers or something, and somebody storms in yelling at them. It was kind of neat, but I just didn't care for the artwork, and I don't know, none of it really interested me much, but it lasted for a while.
Yeah, and then Future Quest. You put one of these Future Quests in in the band, and it's a Steve Root issue, so it's like, yeah, okay, I'll grab it.
I don't know if you did the whole issue. I think you did
I probably did one story in it, but it's Birdman.
Yeah.
So, I love Birdman. So there you go. That was my little haul for it. Like I said, the last time I was there was when the storm hit, and that came out there like $20.
Yeah.
And it was still more.
Yeah, when I went there the other time, I bought a couple of new books off the wall, and then I had this massive pile. I must have got 30 or 40 books out of them. And the Infinite Loop I was interested in, and I had several of them, and I thought, I found 7 issues of Casper from the, 60s. I thought, I'm going to get these. So I put the Infinite Loops back, except the first issue. I thought, I'll try it. Read it, it's great. So I went back to next week and I found the 5th issue, but I can't find the others, which,
Oh, okay.
And so I've come back thinking maybe I missed it, but he must have sold them.
Who drew it? Who did the April?
It's a woman. I don't know. They're all new to me, the writer and the artist.
Is it a 2017 book, or is it older than
I think it's 2016, 2015.
Oh, okay.
It's fairly recent, but...
Did you get two issues or something?
Yeah, I got the first issue and the fifth issue. It was a six-issue series.
Now you got to look around for it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do that. It was a great series. You know, I always sit there and say the person kind of draws like this or draws like that, and somebody writes in and says, well, I don't see that, and that's fine. And a lot of times I'm just kind of throwing things out of my hat. But this one, their own person has more of a clear line style that I like, a simple clear line. But it has kind of a cross between Steve Laiolola, who I love, and a manga style.
Oh, okay.
I like it, but the main character is a female, and it's kind of unique. And they travel through, it's an agency that travels through time. And I don't know, it gets to be like that movie, I think it's called Inception, that came out a few years ago. It's crossed between that and some other stuff, but I don't know, it's a neat title. The look and design of the book really caught me when I saw it online. But when I read the first issue, so this is a really, really good series.
So, is there a trade paperback of it or something?
Yeah, there must be. Yeah, I may just get that instead of finding the single issues.
Yeah, because good luck, you know.
I think I could have got most of them
at
the last issue.
Maybe Yancey might have some, I don't know.
Well, Yancey had it on the wall for a long time. And I was interested in getting it. The thing was, every time I went, I'd always find a lot of books I want. And there's some books that, like, the cover catches me or something. There's one I bought a couple of years ago. I found it in a dollar box, but I was going to buy it off the wall in North Carolina one time. I just really liked the look of the cover and everything. I thought, man, this is nice. And I didn't buy it. I just decided not to. Got in the dollar box, I didn't really find it that interesting. Even though the cover caught me. And the artwork inside looked fine, too. But that's kind of why I stayed away from Infinite Loop. Because, I don't know, I was afraid that would happen again. And at $4 a shot, you know. But it's worth full price. If I would have known, I would have bought them all and been happy.
Yeah, I wonder how these books, book like Infinite Loop, let's say. Do they send a proposal to IDW, and then they accept it, and then they do like, okay, this is going to be, you know, 150 pages or whatever. I mean, because I don't know how these companies work anymore.
I don't either.
It seems like they're all just miniseries or something. And if they do good, they come back for a second series or something like that. But I just can't figure out how they put out the books anymore. So.
I was listening to them. I don't know what podcast it was. It was about comics. Actually, it might have been Anthony Desiato's. You know, he does that My Comic Shop History, and he also does Flat Squirrel Tales. Both are really good. And I think he was talking to one of the guys at IDW, an editor or something, and he said something about Scott McCloud. You know, did that. I talked to that book, The Sculptor.
Yeah.
And the editor was saying that Scott did a full proposal for it, and they were kind of laughing like that wasn't necessary, like they thought it was odd he did that, but Scott McCloud treated it like, you know, he was a new person trying to convince him to do it, and I guess by this time, it sounds to me like if Scott McCloud just burped on a piece of paper, they would print it. They didn't really go into detail, but they were just kind of, he did a full proposal, and everybody was surprised. But so I don't know how it works. A lot of times some of these people that work at Image and IDW are established people like Walt Simonson and stuff. So I don't know about some of the newer ones. The people with the Infinite Loop, I don't know if they've done other work.
Or yeah, but again, it's hard to figure out, you know, how they work or whatever. I don't know the inner workings of stories or whatever, but, you know, obviously somebody must have liked it, and maybe somebody, one of the two creators had a name or something like that. I don't know. I haven't seen Simons' work in a long time. What was he doing for IDW? Was he doing a Rocketeer or something?
Ragnarok.
Oh, Ragnarok.
That
okay.
thing about Stilfor, which I've talked about. He did, I think he's done 6 or 12 issues. He does them in like six issue groups. And it finished. I mean, the story didn't finish, but the issues finished. And he's been posting on Facebook. I guess other issues are coming out, but I've yet to get one.
I think there's a Thor Ragnarok movie coming out, isn't there?
Yeah, I think it already came out.
Yeah, I saw a trailer for it or something on TV, but that has nothing to do with that IDW book.
No.
Oh, okay.
He's doing Thor, but he's basing it more on actual Thor
mythology.
Yeah, and all the gods in that are dead, and Thor basically was a dead husk that these two elves brought back.
Yeah, I'm surprised Marvel wasn't able to copyright Thor, but I guess it can't.
Can't do it.
I guess it's too mythological and all to be able to, but I think they would have if they could.
Well, if he would have made him look like he did in the comic,
yeah. With a beard and blonde hair or whatever, but what the hell does Thor look like now anyway? It's a female. And in the movie, he cut his hair. From the trailer that I saw, so yeah. I was like, okay.
You know, the thing was, I saw that trailer at the movies with my daughter, and we saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And my daughter was so excited. But, you know, they have Hela, you know, from the Jack Kirby stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks like Jack Kirby's work. I mean, it's staggering. And they also have the Executioner with two M16s. You didn't read Simons' Thor run.
I read some of them, yeah.
After the whole saga with Suter, that fire demon that fought Odin, when that whole thing finished with Thor and Beta Ray Bill, the Rainbow Bridge was destroyed, and the Asgardians were stuck in New York City. And Thor, you know, because he's Thor, was able to go back to Asgard without the Rainbow Bridge. And when he was there, a lot of the dead Asgardians were captured by Hela. So Thor led an army into Hel to get them. And Hela was really upset about it. But the Executioner came too.
Oh, okay.
And when they went down there, you know, Executioner was a character I never particularly cared for.
Yeah, the bald-headed guy, right?
Yeah. And he always had a big battle axe.
Yeah, I remember.
And he was always partnered with the Enchantress. And I never liked the Enchantress either. Even though they were both supposed to be Asgardians, they seemed kind of like bumbling, crummy characters to me. But they were in Walt Simonson's run on Thor. And there was at one point where the Executioner was talking to, I don't remember, was this storyline or another one in Simons' run? But there was somebody that came back, and I think they were dead. And he was talking to him, and a Balder went by, Balder the Brave. And he just said briefly, he says, he called him by his name. And he says, I'd watch out, it may not be what it seems. And then he rode off, that's all he said. And then it showed the Executioner thinking. Rook would be happy because it was a thought bubble. But he said, well, everybody says this, but the Bright One spoke. This is Balder spoke, and the Bright One never lies. And then I think he hit the woman he was talking to, and it turns out she was a demon that was trying to steal his soul. And that's when the Asgardians knew and went on. But it was just a brief two-panel thing. And, but like I said, it just showed that Balder, you know, was good and could be trusted. And then, when Thor took them all to Hel, at the end, Hela was really freaking out. Thor busted her mask and showed her true face, which is really scary. She ripped Thor's face off. That's why Simonson had to grow a beard. So he had a part of his cape tied over it.
Yeah.
It was neat. They had a... They had a giant ship, Simonson drew, that I think it was made out of all the dead's fingernails. And it was impressive. I mean, wow, look at that. And that was supposed to take all of them away. And Thor smashed the bolt that took, I don't know, eons. And she was freaking out. He busted her face. She scratched his face. And then they were leaving. And then Thor was going to hold him off. And then the executioner knocked Thor out. He decked him. And then immediately, all the Asgardians went after him, including Baldur. And Baldur was just getting ready to kill him. And then the executioner said, hold on. Let me explain. And so Baldur stopped to listen to him, and he said, or maybe they're going to ask Baldur to stay behind. Anyway, the executioner just spoke that everybody laughed at him all the time. He said nobody took him seriously. He says even the Enchantress, which is supposed to be, you know, his partner, she always laughed at him. And he says, every time they do, I die a little bit. He says, but Baldur never, he always spoke to me like a human being. You know, he always spoke to him as, you know, somebody that mattered. And so he did this for, you know, them. It was really touching, even though I'm butchering the story. And because all the Asgardians spent all this time in New York and on Earth because of Suter, they all had machine guns that the American military gave to them. So at the very end, they give him two of the machine guns, along with his axe and everything else. And he held off that entryway so the Asgardians could get away from Hela's army. And he held them off. And then it was staggering because it showed him, while this is going on the side there was four panels, and it was the same headshot of the executioner. The top one was the full one. The second one was like 80%, 75% screened, and then, you know, 50% screened, and then almost 15% where he's gone. Basically showed that the executioner died. Absolutely one of the highlights of Simonson. It's one that everybody remembers from Simonson's run, which there was a lot of things everybody remembers from that. Anyway, that was in the preview.
Oh, okay.
It showed the executioner with the two machine guns. And
that was in the preview, the new one?
Yeah. Yeah, from last summer.
Oh, wow. So it's based on the Simonson story.
I think it's based on a lot of things. I don't think it's just Simonson's, but a lot of Walt Simonson's stuff appears in these movies, along with all these movies are peppered with Jack Kirby and Stan Lee's work. But, like, a lot of Jim Starlin is in a bunch of these films. A lot of Jim Starlin and a lot of Walt Simonson and the Thor stuff. I've only seen the first one. Somebody lent me the DVD. I never saw the second one, but my daughter says, man, that Thor Ragnarok looks really good. It looked pretty good. And I think there's a reason he cut his hair, but I don't know.
Yeah, maybe somebody shaved it for him or something. Maybe somebody burned his head off or something. You know, who knows? But yeah, I saw it. I was like, oh, there's a new Thor movie. Okay. So, did Walt Simonson continue writing Thor through the Salva Sema?
I didn't.
You stopped reading it, okay.
Yeah, no, I don't like Salva Sema. I've seen some of these he's done I think are good, but that's not even a 0.1% of all the work he's done. I think I differ with Al. I think Al does like Sal.
Yeah, I do.
He's got a big following. I mean, there's a lot of people that just think he's the greatest.
So you stopped reading it after Simonson stopped drawing.
Yeah,
even though he kept writing it, right?
He kept writing it. Now Sal Buscema, while Simonson's doing Thor, Sal Buscema drew one issue where it's after Suter, you know, that whole saga. There was one issue. Simonson wrote it, but Sal Buscema drew it, and it's Thor and his mother-in-law, or his stepmother. They go back to get all the kids. They were hidden away because of the battle. And he ends up, I don't know if he meets his grandfather. He's frozen snow and meets his grandfather, which is a storm giant. And Sal Buscema drew it. First thing, well, Sal Buscema, why did I buy this? But the story was strong and the artwork was good. I mean, it wasn't as good as Simonson's, but I thought, okay, I'll take it. And then, Walt Simonson did a mini-series called Baldur and Carnilla, which told a little bit more about Baldur the Brave and what happened to him. And Sal Buscema drew it. But he drew it like Walt Simonson drew it. You know, he wasn't the typical Sal Buscema look. I bought the first issue and thought, well, this isn't bad, but I didn't buy the other three. And then I remember when they announced that Simonson wasn't going to draw it anymore and Sal Buscema was going to draw it, a lot of people complained, like, well, I can't believe this. After I moved here to Florida, it was one of the later issues, Thor's fighting the dragon. I think it was the Earth Serpent. And this is when Simonson had him in that new armor, which I didn't particularly like. But I bought that issue. Simonson wrote it. I think he laid it out. And Sal Buscema drew it. I thought, this isn't bad. I should have got the other ones. But looking at it, that was kind of a high watermark. So, yeah, I didn't buy the other issues.
Oh, okay. I was just checking. So I remember getting a few of them, but after a while, I stopped, too. After a while, probably Simonson stopped writing them, too.
Yeah, and he wrote it for a while, but I think he stopped in about...
I mean, Sal changed his style for that book, so you got to give him some credit, because he really did change his look, and he adapted that new style. I thought he did an okay job at it.
I want to say this, as I always point out, I didn't like Sal Buscema, but he absolutely had the chops.
Yeah.
And one thing, when I read, and he was on Comic Geek Speak, they did an interview. I'll tell you, really congenial, personal guy. Yeah, even though I didn't like his work, I found I loved him. He was just greatness. But Marvel found out he could be a go-to guy, that he was really good at breaking down and laying out stories.
Yeah, he did quick.
And, yeah, so they used him for it. And so when that's your mindset, you don't refine yourself so quickly. And, you know, he was basically saying that they were calling him. They needed an entire 22-page story knocked out in a weekend.
Yeah.
And he was all over the place. A lot of times, if you bought a Marvel comic, chances are he did it or broke it down for somebody else. But there were some issues. There were some spectacular Spider-Man issues he did. I thought, wow, this guy's really good. There were some. I remember Britt was always pointing out when I was in college, Steve Laiolola inked him on, I can't remember what book it was. But he was, look, he really made Sal Buscema look good. He had the chops, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think we looked at it one time. I think that there were some months in the 70s where Sal Buscema had like 4 books.
Yeah.
Easily. And 3 of them were breakdowns, probably. That he did, and the inkers were doing all the heavy lifting, but you know what? Without the layout, the inkers didn't know what the hell to do anyway, you know what I mean? But, yeah, I like the way he adapted his style, but, that Thor movie's out this weekend, so, you know.
Well, I thought it was already out.
Oh, I thought maybe it is. I just saw a trailer 3 or 4 days ago, which makes me think that it's coming out, but maybe it was out.
Oh, well, maybe
I know there's a Blade Runner 2049 coming out, and I'm like, okay. Sure, why not? I didn't know it was coming.
Oh, yeah. Ridley Scott did it. Harrison Ford's in it.
Yeah, I know. It's the guys, you know.
One thing, we'll talk about Blade Runner for a second. In 82, I was with Brett at the Fantasy Fair in Dallas, Texas over the summer.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
And but they had a film. Ridley Scott was talking to the audience. He was up in one of those, you know, those cranes they use for the director.
Cherry Pickers.
And, so what's this called?
I think so.
But he was on that, and he was talking on the film, and then they showed footage from it. And then I remember it finished, he came back and says, well, thank you, enjoy the convention. Wow, that's something. But I was interested, and we all had buttons that had Harrison Ford's headshot, and it said Harrison Ford in Blade Runner. So when the movie came out, me and this girl went to see it at the Shepherd Twin at the mall. And I'll tell you, in 82, it was shocking. Because, you know, there's a lot of dystopian stuff in the late 70s.
Yeah, 80s especially. Though.
Yeah, but in the late 70s, you used to have movies like Americathon and stuff
Death
like that.
Death Race 2000. Race 2000.
But even early 70s, you used to get like Clockwork Orange and stuff. You're thinking, But, you know, in...
Logan's Run.
In Blade Runner, it was always raining. Yeah, Logan's...
I forgot about all those 70s ones. I keep thinking of the 80s ones because those are the ones that Mao goes after. But yeah, there were quite a few 70s ones.
The 80s, it turned...
ZPGs, Soylent Green.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was a bunch of them. But the 80s, I think mostly it was after nuclear Armageddon.
Yeah, it was post-nuke.
The ones in the 70s was basically we used up all the resources and destroyed everything and just went too far, but...
Now we got to kill you after you turn 30.
Yeah. But, What a thought.
I remember the comic book, too, by George Perez.
That is my absolute favorite comic adaptation.
Was that one? Cool.
The first issue Jerry Conway wrote, I always thought it was, I always said it was Archie Goodwin, but it was Jerry Conway.
Jerry Conway, okay.
And then the other issues are written by David Michelinie. George Perez drew them, and Klaus Janson inked them.
Yeah, they're nice, man.
And those five issues are still some of my favorite comics.
They're nice.
And those were greatness. But, no, was it Blade Runner? When I saw that, when it ended, I walked out of the theater.
And confused?
Yeah, a little confused. Like, I wasn't... It wasn't like when I saw Star Wars where you're so elated, you know, but... Or Close Encounters and those other movies. You kind of went out with this mystified feeling, like, okay, there was things... It was strange. There was such a... There's such an Asian culture to it, you know.
Sure,
he was going eating the noodles, and it was always.
Sure.
It was, you never saw that in Oklahoma, and people didn't even speak English, which again you never saw in Oklahoma. And later I saw my friend again, and I was just telling her, I said, "Yeah, it was kind of good," and she shook her head like, "Missed? Yes, it was." But, for understood, the movie didn't always do quite so well.
Oh man, but they've redone it. They've had 8 million editions of it, you know.
Like, well,
and then of course they re-edited it. So,
well, that's the thing I was getting to.
Yes.
Because my
yes,
it was 2 years later. I met Michael Kaluta. We were in San Diego at a comic store, and that came up. It was Blade Runner. You know, it was based off of that Mobius look, that city. A Long Tomorrow that Dan O'Bannon and Mobius did together.
Oh, okay.
Ridley Scott said, "This is the city I'm wanting," which is a city built deep into the Earth's surface. And so that's what they, you know, Sid Mead and all these guys built everything off of. And Michael Kaluta was talking about how much he loved it. And the manager of that big comic store said, "I think the reason it didn't do so well in California was that nobody in the film spoke English, and that's what everybody's afraid of." You know, in California, you got a lot of, you know, immigrants from everywhere. And Michael Kaluta, we just kept going on about how much he loved that film. Well, at the time, like I said, I was still mystified by it because I liked it. I told my friend it was really good, but the ending left me wanting more. Well, then in the early 90s, they put out the director's cut. And everybody I worked with was going on about it. It was in the paper. They had a whole write-up and about how Decker, the main character, found out he at the end of the movie he was a replicant, which wasn't what it ended when I saw it.
No, it sure wasn't. She was.
Yeah, she was. And he said, I remember he did the voiceover wasn't in the film that Harrison Ford did, like an old Mickey Spillane, film noir. But at the end of the movie when they were leaving, Harrison Ford said, "Well, we don't know how long she has, but does anybody?" Which is kind of poetic, but there was nothing about him being one. Well, go back a few years ago, my daughter and I are in Oklahoma, and we went to Half Price Books down there, and they had Blade Runner for $5, the DVD. It had 5 discs in it.
Oh, God.
And my daughter... My daughter looked at it, and she picked it up, and I thought, you know, I want this, too. So I got it. And when I'm paying for them at the counter, the guy, Half Price Books, it's a really nice store. You can buy a lot of stuff for not a lot of money. And everybody at this store is so happy you're there. They're so happy you're buying it. And you can see it's like they love the stuff like their own children, but they're not holding it like this is mine. And the guys behind the counter are like, "Oh, man. This is a great film. Have you seen it?" And I told him, I saw this when it came out at the Shepherd Mall Twin. "Really?" Well, these guys probably weren't even alive at the time.
No.
But I said, "Yeah, I saw it," and they just kept going on about it like it's the second coming of Christ. So what were my brothers, we watched the last disc on it, which was the... Each disc... They all had extras.
The movie.
I didn't realize they edited it so many times.
I know. Yeah.
So the first disc had the original theatrical release. The second disc had the director's cut that came out in the early 90s that everybody's going gaga about. I didn't know that they did other ones. And the last one was absolutely what Ridley Scott wanted. And I'm here to tell you, it's a far superior movie. And when it was finished, my nephew was just kind of flabbergasted. My brother said, I'm going to go back and buy him one. And I remember when that thing finished, Holly's like, he's one of them? Yeah, it told a different story. It was a much better movie.
Yeah.
And then my daughter went back to college, and she brought the disc, and she watched all the discs.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, but she said, God, that first movie, I don't know why anybody thought it was good. Well, like I said,
that was all we had.
Yeah, and it left, like, I think you and I both agree, it kind of left you mystified.
Yeah, this is fine with me.
It sucked me, it sucked you into the world, and there's certain things that you never forget. And then a whole part where Rutger Hauer at the end, when he's chasing Harrison Ford down, is absolutely terrifying. And at the very end, when he stops and tells Harrison Ford, I've seen things you'll never even be able to imagine. And he told that Sudoku, that poem. That was incredible. That's something you can't ever forget. It was, he stole the whole movie with those like four or five lines. But like I said, the later version, the latest version is far superior to all the other ones.
Okay.
But, so anyway, but I was really skeptical about Blade Runner coming out again.
And this is a new movie, right?
Yeah.
This isn't another edit of the
no,
movie.
No, it's a... Yeah.
Okay, good.
No, this is a new one. It's
okay,
Blade Runner 2046 or something. I don't know what it's called.
2049.
Oh, is it 2049?
Yeah, okay, good.
But when it came out, people... It's like when they said they're going to bring back Watchmen. You know?
Yeah, right.
And when they're going to do a new Watchmen series, that's how everybody acted. But Ridley Scott was involved, and I didn't think it was out. I think Britt went to see it. But I started reading on Facebook, a lot of people going on about how good it is. But I saw it was out this weekend. I was even telling Myrna I wanted to see it. And she watched it at my brother's house and kind of liked it, but she gave me a look like, oh, God, again. So I don't know if I'm going to get to see it or not.
Oh, maybe. Who knows?
So anyway.
Keep your fingers crossed.
But anyway, anything else you
got? Yeah, that's it, man.
All right. We're back in St. Pete. I guess that's all we got. Look for us again in a couple of weeks. In the meantime,
read more comics.
My name is Mal, and with me as always,
Dr. Morbius.
Some parts unknown.
Question mark?
This is the promo for Slow Robot A Go Go, the B through Z grade movie review podcast.
That's right.
If that's obscure and you've never heard of it and it's horrible, we're your men.
We're your men.
We're here to.
We're the dudes.
We're the dudes that are going to review it and talk about it. And you're going to be like, why would they talk about that? And we don't know either.
And then you're going to want to run out and get these movies and pay big money, Blu-ray money to get these movies because they're all great and you're all going to love them.
But anyway, go to bunchofdorks.com.